Blog Talk Radio.
Online, on air.
Politics on the Navajo Nation.
Dylan, you are listening to Internet Radio Politics on the Navajo Nation. To be our guest, call 347-989-0048.
Good evening. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is Cal Nez. And welcome, everybody, all of those that are listening from everywhere in the world, so to speak, to the internet world. Thank you very much, and we value your participation. I'm glad that you guys are all here with us. And, of course, today is Wednesday, and at 9 o'clock we will always have a show. And, well, I should say always, but I hope so anyway. So. But I appreciate you being a friend on Facebook as well as here on the radio. And I hope that real soon that I'll be able to get another time slot, maybe twice a week, three times a week, and maybe all week. But nonetheless, we're here. And again, this is Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is Cal Nez, and you are welcome to give us a call at 347-989-0048, or you can listen in on Face or on actually a Blog Talk Radio. So I'm very, very grateful that you're here. So anyway, we have several things on the plate this evening. We have scheduled to bring in the Navajo Nation Executive Director, Mr. Albert Damon, and also we have Marty Shabala, who's also going to be calling in, and also we have Bill Donovan from the he's a reporter from the Navajo Nation, and so I believe this might be Mr. Damon. Hello, Yate.
Good evening. Cal Nez, Albert Damon here.
Hey, yes, sir, Mr. Damon. I'm going to put you back on hold. I need to get one other person online, and I'll bring you back in just a few minutes. So I appreciate it. There were several callers who were calling in, so I needed to go through, not knowing what people's are. So thank you very much. Hold on one second, please.
Sure.
Okay. I believe it's Marty Shabala. Oops, she's not online. Let's see. Hold on one second here. Oh, boy. Marty is calling me on the other line. Huh. Well, I tell you, there's a lot. Anyway, I gave her the number. So I will bring Marty on when she calls in. But anyway, so we'll just get right to the topic, I suppose, this evening, and that is that I will we'll go ahead and begin talking about the Navajo Nation energy policy. And I probably should preface this conversation in terms of that the discussion obviously is an invitation, hopefully that is going to provide more information to the general public out there. We have, our listener base has really has gone up in the last 3 weeks, and I suspect that it's going to continue to grow and continue to move forward. But nonetheless, this is an information basis. And my angle as the host of these of this radio show, which is an invitation for everybody to call in, but here is my my take on this thing. The Navajo Nation, I encourage, and I am glad the Navajo Nation government is seeking ways to facilitate and to be able to bring the economy up. I think that whether you're the Navajo Nation or any government should be working hard to do that. That's a given. But within those dynamics, one of the angles that I always try to say is that I am a business advocate. I advocate business on the Navajo Nation. I advocate a Navajo business. I advocate here in the state of Utah for Native American business. And on a national level, I advocate minority business. And I think that because of my interest and my participation is it comes down to one thing, and that is that there are laws. There are laws in place, and they're not my laws. They're federal laws, they're state laws, as well as this Navajo Nation law. In the case of Navajo Nation, it's called the Navajo Business Opportunity Act, and for the working for employment for the Navajo Nation government, Navajo Preference. And so in all of these activities that are going across the board, you know what, my question to any government is how much of these include the minority or Native American or, in this case, the Navajo Nation. So we're going to be talking about the energy policy of 2013. There's a lot of people who have engaged in on the discussion, what is it, where it's at, and all of this. So this evening I have the Navajo Nation Executive or the Navajo Nation Division of Economic Development Executive Director, Mr. Albert Damon, is on the phone with us, and I can hear some background noise, Mr. Damon. If you can turn it down or something, I'm not sure what's going on, but yes. So now the Navajo Nation energy policy, all the background information, when it started, who started, and where it's at, I'm not exactly certain what it is, and so if we if you could, Mr. Damon, I'd like to bring you on and have you introduce yourself, and if you could then go into what the Navajo Nation energy policy is. Welcome, Mr. Damon.
Thank you, Mr. Nez. I appreciate the opportunity here, and welcome everybody out there in the world that's listening to this. The Navajo Nation energy policy of 2013 was crafted with the Navajo Energy Policy of 1980. They did have this earlier. We did tweak it for this day and age and how we do business now. And so that's how it got started, and we were able to do that. The Energy Advisory Committee set up by Mr. President Shelley was integral in setting up this policy. We did meet with a lot of folks. We had some town hall meetings. We had some energy folks come in and a lot of people to help us with this one. But essentially what it means is that the Navajo Nation needed an energy policy to guide the developments of energy on the nation. As you recall, Mr. Shelley, this is one of his platforms was energy, and therefore we had to craft an ability to guide the development of those things. And it covers a lot of stuff on the Navajo Nation. As you know, resources are rich on Navajo. We had to be able to address all of them. And within that, you know, all the resources are in it, air, water, minerals, all wind and solar power, all the alternative sources are inside that policy. The policy was crafted as a guide. It's not exactly law. The policy just develops the avenue for the development of energy resources on the nation. That's kind of the overall view of the energy policy as it sits out. It has been addressed by Council, Navajo Nation Council. They did adopt it as of 2013. So it is real. It is taking off, and it addresses a lot of issues that we are doing. The Navajo Nation is blessed with tremendous resources, and therefore it had to be managed. And in this day and age of solar power, alternative power, all these other things that need to go into that are addressed, even uranium. That was one of the issues that we had discussed on it. Again, on my take on the energy policy for the uranium is that I was involved with it to clean up the sites on Nation, not to actively mine or anything do that with uranium, but we need to clean it up. Back in the 40s, you know, they mined it here, and they left it as is for eons, and now it needs to be addressed, and so that's part of it. So the energy policy has those things in it. So, Mr. Nez, I'll turn it back over to you, just a brief overview of the overall policy.
Yeah, okay. Well, I appreciate that. Can you tell us who was on the energy policy committee, and when did they get rolling on this particular 2013 policy?
When Mr. Shelley's administration came in 2010, he appointed the Energy Advisory Committee individuals. And on the team, if I can remember them all real good, is that Mr. Fred White is the Division of Natural Resources Director, Mr. Harrison Soce, the Attorney General, Mr. Akhtar Zaman, Minerals Department Manager, Mr. Stephen Etcity, who is the Environmental Protection Agency Director here on Navajo, also myself, and Mr. Benali, who is the Water Resources Director of Navajo Nation, and also Mr. at the time, when inception, was Mr. Sam Woods, who was the energy liaison for Mr. Shelley then. Those teams have gone on. And we actually, within this week, there is an executive order that will be released by Mr. Shelley appointing two more members. I think Mrs. Clara Pratt will be on it, and she is the director of the Washington office for us. She'll be on the team also. So those are the ones off the top of my head that I can relate to the energy policy members.
Are you also on the committee?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. So having said that, so that kind of just paints the picture that so it's predominantly the Navajo Nation's employees really who's serving on this committee. In terms of the general public, was there any invitations made to any of the private citizens out there to serve on this committee?
Not to my understanding. I think this is more of an executive committee on the executive side of the Navajo Nation government. On the outside, we did have firms and companies come in. We did have consultations with them. And also the energy policy was part of the town hall meetings that Mr. Shelley had provided back in 2010 and 2011 to craft this policy.
Okay.
Mr. Ness.
So can you kind of tell us a little bit about where these, is this part of that reservation-wide? They covered, I know they covered business where they went and had a town hall meeting or a round table there in Window Rock. So I know there's other topics that they covered. So are you saying that the energy policy was part of that? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. That was part of the town hall meeting. We had to get input from the communities to make sure that the policy fit each of the chapter areas and their resources that they are blessed with.
Yeah. And the reason why that I think it's going to be important, Mr. Damon, is that because there's been a huge discussion since the signing and since the dynamics of all of this business coming together about NTEC, about the energy policy, and so we're kind of like going back and kind of a reverse discovery, if you will. But I think at the nucleus of this discussion is the energy policy, which basically spawned or brought about INTEC, and the INTEC became the vehicle to purchase the Navajo mine. And so, but also on another reality that we discovered about three shows ago was that the Navajo Nation bought a mine. They did not buy a power plant. They bought the mine. And that was a real huge discovery for me, I think, as well as a lot of listeners. So now back to the energy policy. So we have we got this committee, and when you said that how many meetings that you guys have had, one of the biggest questions has been is that how much has the general public been notified on this?
I think, in my opinion, they were there all along. We do have these things on our website, especially the Natural Resources Division website. They have it on there. The public had comment period also going through this as it went through the tribal legislation in council.
What was the comment period to take in place?
At council, there was a 5-day comment period that they could comment on these, and everybody in the world could comment, and that was one of them. And, of course, the town hall meetings that we had, those were the public comments.
How many town hall meetings did you guys have?
Oh, my goodness. I'd say off the top of my head, it was about at least four. I would venture to say there was six. I was at four of them. I knew that.
Of those four, what were the locations?
Shiprock, Tuba City, and I think we had one in Wind Rock, of course, and also Crown Point. I think it was the other one I went to.
And how did you go out and advertise these town hall meetings?
They were in the paper. And again, they're on the tribal websites. They were announced on radio, I believe, and most of that was done with the president's office, the office of the president and vice president. They did all that front-end marketing.
Okay, so at each of these town hall meetings, how many people attended?
The ones that I attended, the place was packed. There was easily over 50 at each of the centers that we went to.
Okay, so who presented these this policy to them?
It was the entire Energy Advisory Committee. As an example, in the Shiprock area, Mr. Fred White chaired the meeting, and we took input, and we had questionnaires that they would fill out, and they would write those things in there. And some of the things that came up in these meetings, especially in Shiprock, was, what are you going to do with the water? We have a flowing river here. That is an energy resource. What are you doing with it? Hydropower, developing electricity off paddles. How are you going to do that? So there was some really good input from the communities.
Okay. And I think, Mr. Dane, the reason why I'm asking these questions is because, you know, a lot of people felt that they were left out. But it sounds to me like that's a pretty good coverage. If there's the four, you've got Window Rock, you've got Shiprock, Tuba City, and then what was the fourth place?
I think it was Crown Point I went to, yes. There were others. I wasn't able to attend the others, but those are the ones that I attended.
So if they were packed, so that's one avenue. And also another avenue of getting information out to the community, my assumption would be is obviously the first place to go is to talk to Navajo Nation Council and say, hey, we're doing this. And making a comparison on a national basis. I mean, Congress, if there's an issue happening back there that affects a certain state, certainly it's their job to come back to your whole town meetings here in our area and say, hey, you know what, this is what's happening. This is where I stand on it, but you need to advise me what it is. And what is your opinion? Did that happen with the Navajo Nation Council delegates? And how much did you work with them on those?
It was tremendous. It was extensive. The policy to get through council had to go through the standing committees before it gets to the main council, in which the Resource and Development Committee, which was my oversight, and also the Budget and Finance Committee, those two committees, they were integral in it. We had to present to them, and the Resources and Development Committee, chaired by Ms. Benally, they had it for a while, almost about 6-7 months in their stead. They asked for a couple of work sessions with us, so we were able to provide work sessions on detailing how the energy policy is crafted, the language in it. Some of the discussions from the council was that they wanted more teeth in it, more like law. Again, this policy is a guide. If and then when we do energy projects, then those policies then get crafted by the council to law for those specific projects. As an example, one of our projects that's been kind of like dead in the water for a while is the Gray Mountain Wind Project. Wind turbine generated electricity out at Gray Mountain. That one is in the policy. We want to be able to do some things like that for alternative energy. They had discussions to have it crafted, this being the policy, to where it reflects Navajo law. And we said that is possible. It is. But if this is a policy, it is a guide. It's not the exact framework of the laws that go in. So they were concerned about that. So, and Budget and Finance Committee, they had their input to it also. And then it finally got to NABI KIT Committee. Then they had their chance to weigh in and address the policy, and they made comments with it. Those comments were inserted, and the policy was crafted, and the council passed it in 2013. So the committee has not had a chance.
So it's your assumption that the council delegates did their duty by informing their particular chapters.
Unknown on what they did there, our task was to inform the council how this policy is being crafted and the actual language going in. Some of the council members having legal backgrounds, they were wanting to tighten it up a little more, get it a little tighter so that they can craft the laws. But when you do that, you kind of limit yourself in the ability to work with the policy. So at that point in time, we explained to them that the policy is a guide. It's just a framework of ideas to get these things through the nation's systems to be able to implement specific projects. Once those projects come in, another example is like solar. Solar power, we're trying to do solar farms here. They wanted some specific language with that. So essentially, they had a chance at it. I do not know if they took it back to their respective chapters. I believe they should have, and in the town hall meetings we're at chapter areas, so I would venture to say that it was done.
All right. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, and we have Navajo Nation representatives here with us, Mr. Albert Damon, who is the executive director of the Navajo Nation Division of Economic Development, and we're talking about the energy policy and the development, give some better, clear information about how it was developed. And so we urge you to call in at 347-989-0048. And I appreciate Mr. Damon. And so while you're gathering your thoughts, Mr. Damon, I am going to bring on another guest, and I'll bring you back afterwards, if you wouldn't mind. Would you come back?
Wonderful. That would be fine.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much. And so we have another topic that has been going through the news media here recently, and the Navajo Nation Speaker Johnny Mays has been in the news quite often, and so I invited again Ms. Marnie Shabala, who is a Navajo businesswoman operating her business covering the Navajo Nation government. And, of course, it's my assumption that she sits in on all of the meetings, literally on a minute-by-minute basis. And so I thought she would be one to cover the this topic. So, Marley Shabala, yate to here, Craigie. I didn't need to know Maggie. So the time is open to you. How are you doing, Marley?
Cal, I'm doing really good, really busy. And like you said, there's a lot of discussion, a lot of interest in what's happening in the council because of the top leadership. And maybe our listeners don't understand, but that position is you have a three-branch government, the legislative, the judicial, and the executive. And the executive is headed by President Shelley. The judicial is headed by the Supreme Court Chief Justice, Yazzie. And then you have the legislative branch, which is headed by Speaker Johnny Nays. And there are discussions about, even among the council, in the council itself recently, because there was legislation sponsored by Council Delegate Alton Shepard, that legislation cited Navajo law that the council delegate who serves as council speaker has to be in good standing. And recently, the speaker, in December, the special prosecutors filed several charges, 10 charges of bribery and one charge of conspiracy to commit bribery against Speaker Nays. And going to be arraigned next month. Well, it'll be in March. But his press releases, he said that he is innocent. And, of course, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty. But the issue that the council is having to grapple with is whether or not he's in good standing, whether or not he complies with the law. And those are serious charges, bribery and conspiracy. Especially bribery, because it deals with the actions of a government official. And there are terms that are used, such as hush money, being in cahoots to use your position. And those positions they don't belong to those individuals that are currently serving in them, such as Speaker Johnny Nays or any of the council delegates. And Shiprock chapter actually passed legislation, and they want the Attorney General to give a legal opinion about whether or not those council delegates and Speaker Nays is a council delegate that have these serious charges of crimes against them, as to whether or not they should step down. And just last Sunday, the Burnham chapter passed similar legislation asking the Attorney General for a legal opinion. And there's even issues nationally as far as whether or not you would do any kind of business with someone who has that kind of background. You know, speaking just from the business point, you know. The gaming compact was up, and Speaker Nays didn't attend those meetings, and he's done that in the past. Why wasn't he there? Was it because of these charges?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it also makes it difficult for the Navajo Nation to do business.
So basically, and what you're saying is that because of these, because of the magnitude of his role in the Navajo Nation government, by these charges, it is impeding on his ability to carry out his role.
It not just in carrying out his role, it's creating a domino effect. And I spoke with one of the business people who was working with Council Delegate Catherine Benally. She heads the Resources and Development Committee, and she worked with Mr. Damon on getting together a huge package for a $220 million bond, which is basically a loan, and it was going through the process. And I went to one of the financial institutions and asked if these recent charges against the speaker, because he would be the one that would basically sign the agreement. He would be sitting across the table. And this individual, one of the financial institutions, well, yes, you know, they do the background checks on the Navajo Nation. And, yes, you know, that does have an impact on it. And, well, the bond and the loan could go through, but because there's this uncertainty created by those charges of bribery and conspiracy, that maybe the interest would be a little bit higher than what it would have been. So he was saying basically that the credibility of the Navajo Nation had been tarnished. It wasn't as high as strong. And I think you understand those terms more so, Cal, because you're a business person. And do you want to go into business with someone whose character is in question and make an investment,
exactly.
You know, a multi-million dollar investment? And we're talking $220 million.
Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, those are items that should factor into some of the decisions that are being made. So having said that, so you kind of, I appreciate you giving us the kind of the background information about this issue. Now, I'm going to ask you a three-part question. One is that where do you suppose this is going, and how do you think it's going to end up? And, of course, I just want to kind of preface this particular statement, and that is that, well, of course, you're in business, and there's going to be your own personal opinion, and also the other opinion is going to be how do you see the Navajo Nation Council members, you know, the other members, where do you think they stand at? Of course, you're almost on a daily contact with them. And then the other one is, what do you think is the general consensus across the Navajo Nation?
With the council, the Navajo law states that if you're going to remove the speaker, it has to be by supermajority vote, which means that 16 have to vote yes to remove the speaker, to remove Mr. Nays as speaker. And that doesn't mean that he'll also lose his position as council delegate. He'll remain a council delegate. And then it would depend on his community as to whether or not, you know, they would start a recall or what would happen. And also you have the other factor, which is that chapters seem to be, I was surprised that a second chapter passed legislation asking the Attorney General for legal opinion. So, you know, could there be other chapters that'll do that? But then again, you need 16 council delegates to say yes and remove the speaker. And this only happened recently.
Just
a couple of days ago when this finally went to the council. And even just, you know, and there was even discussion on the council, and they were very careful about what they were saying, almost too careful. Because what immediately came to them was, did this legislation come to us properly? It was before the speaker on the 6th, but it actually didn't get posted till the 8th. And so you had two dates when it was supposed to have been posted. Then when it gets posted, it has to have 5-day comment period, and then it can get into the actual, can go to an actual committee. And that was another issue. There was a question that was not asked, but kind of everyone was murmuring, was the speaker is the one that says, okay, it goes to these committees and then lets that legislation go. He didn't let that legislation go.
Yeah.
And that's why, why Allison Shepard said, hey, you know, I have this legislation on the 6th, and then Russell B. Gay announced at the Shiprock chapter, the legislation is out there, you need to comment, and then the next day it was like, where is it? I called both of the gentlemen and had to call again the legislator, and then finally it popped up on the 8th. So then even then, you know, it's like this is what happens when you put someone in a position the way that we have our council set up to police themselves. It's difficult. And it creates all these other uncertainties, suspicions. And then now you have this law, and they went into executive session. They didn't want to openly discuss that legislation to remove him. And now legislation just recently was posted to name a new speaker. So it looks like Phil has really thoroughly discussed this, and they understand and will respect the law. And that's one thing, you know, they're the lawmakers. They make these laws.
So what's your perception in terms of them getting, are they going to remove him?
I feel that they will. I think it's going to be a very close vote. But when they were going into executive session and there was a huge debate on it, having covered counsel, you know who are very strong supporters of Speaker Nays and the ones that are very respectful of what their community wants. When their community say, you know, we're not sure about Navajo Technical Energy or Transitional Energy Company, we want more information, and we don't have it, please vote no.
Yeah.
And they vote no. You know, they just don't move along just because the speaker is sponsoring the legislation or he's fully supporting it or the president is. They go back to their chapters. There are council delegates that do that. And they want their communities to be informed. And that would be, I mean, if, and then you go back to also, you have to understand Navajo government. You know, we're Navajo government. Even though we have this government that is the clone of the federal government, we have the fundamental law. And the standards are much higher than what the federal government requires, which is our clone government.
Mm-hmm.
But our government, and when I say our, I'm speaking as Navajo, Diné, the fundamental law, that standard is very high for leadership. And there are stories of leaders that had problems with their family. And they stepped down. They said, we can't even handle our family, so how can we be expected to handle, you know, our serve as a leader? And there was very strong ethics, very strong values that were respected and understood and how you were as a leader. And Mr. Speaker needs to look at that too, because I've often heard him talk about that. And all our leaders need to understand that in anything. And I think that's where the big concern is too with the energy policy. They wanted it to be very strong in respect for the resources and for the home. I mean, just because your home maybe has something of value in it, and of course each of us do, we have, you know, our turquoise jewelry and everything, it doesn't mean we just sell it until it's gone, you know, heirlooms. I mean, just because it's worth a lot of money, but it's worth more because it came from your great-great-grandmother. And there's that kind of thinking, and there's this clashing, though, with economic development. There has to be there has to be time for the people to talk and really talk it out and feel like, okay, we're understood. Let's have this consensus. Let's have this give and take. Okay, you know, let's go ahead and exploit the coal. Let's exploit the oil and gas. But we want it limited, and we want these controls on it.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like I really do appreciate you giving us an update. And if necessary, we'll cover it again, and we'll stay on this thing until we know where it's going. And I appreciate that, Marley, and wish you the best of luck. And thanks for sharing this information with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, yes, okay. And so thank you to Marley Shabala, and of course, you know, that we're a lot of this discussion is still going to be ongoing. As you can tell, it's going to be a huge topic. And again, one of the things that, you know, that I said, and this is, she brought it up as well, was that, you know, do we live in a society where it's guilty until proven innocent, or is it going to be innocent until proven guilty? And I guess we'll leave those into the hands of the our leaders. But, you know, hopefully that the general input is coming from the Navajo Nation or the Navajo people themselves. And it'd be interesting to see where this all goes. And so we have next with us is this Bill Donovan.
Cal, how are you?
Hey, along, Bill, hold on one second. Bill, one second. Let me play this, okay? And then right after that, it's your floor.
Okay, thank you. Cal, this is Bill Donovan. I'm a reporter for the Navajo Times. A long time ago, maybe about 15 years ago, the Navajo Times had a program on the KTNN. And Marley Shabala and I were on that program, and we never agreed on anything. And on this issue of Nays, I think there should be a couple of things that should be pointed out. One thing is, I think by now Nays knows how many votes he has. He's talked to members of the council, and he knows whether or not he has enough votes to stay on as speaker. If he doesn't have enough votes, I'm pretty sure he's talking to the special prosecutor now about making some kind of deal, much like the deal that Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley and the Vice President, Rex Lee Jim, made just before they took office. In that deal, both of them agreed that they would repay the money back that they were accused of taking illegally, and they had a payment schedule put into effect where they were paying about $150 a month to pay it back. I think if Mays feels he's going to be kicked off as a speaker, he was told to special prosecutors and asked for a similar type deal whereby he would be able to pay over the next year that money back, because the money that he would lose as going back to the council delegate from the speaker would be enough to pay it back. So I think that would be a solution that he is thinking of very strongly right now. And I think that may be what's going to happen. Cal?
Okay, Bill. Yeah, having said that, Bill, let me ask you a question. So there's been several different topics that have cropped up in the process as well, is that when we're talking about, you know, so what you're saying is that, hey, let's maybe offer a deal to all, not only the speakers, but to everybody else, and we get this thing back. But wouldn't that be essentially an admittance of guilt?
Well, in the case of Shelley and Rex Lee Jim, they did not admit guilt. All they did was say, we basically said no contest. We'll pay it back, and we won't admit any guilt. Now, the special prosecutor is doing that with some of the people that have been charged. Some of them have been dismissed, and some of them are working out deals. So I don't think this is going to be unusual for Nays to do it either. And
so
remember,
how does that affect the... So how does that affect...
Makes, and being a speaker, I don't think it would have any effect. If Shelley and Lee, actually Jim, were able to go on and become chairman, president, and vice president, what would harm would have to be Mace to continue on as speaker under those circumstances?
Hmm. Very interesting. So essentially what you're saying is that just, hey, everybody, just pay the money back and continue with the public service.
Yes. But even again, it may not have to pay all of it back. The special prosecutors are making deals. So if he just pays back maybe half, he may be able to get a deal with a special prosecutor.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Well, Bill, that's a very different point of view. And, you know, of course, you know, this is Bill Donovan's opinion, and I appreciate that, Bill. That's why I bring you back on, to kind of give a different angle to everything. So, again, thank you, Bill. Anything
I'll
else?
Talk to you next week. That's it. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'll go on in. Well, everybody. See, there's different points of view and something for us to all think about. And the bottom line is that if you're zeroing in on this particular subject matter, I would probably urge everybody to call your council delegate and give your opinions and let them know how you want them to vote. And whether you're on the Navajo Nation or off the Navajo Nation, you know, here's an opportunity for you to you know, to engage yourself in the Navajo Nation government process. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, and we're going to get back to our main topic, which is the Navajo Nation energy policy. And we have Mr. Albert Damon with us on air from Window Rock, and I appreciate his patience that he's been here with us, and we have a few more minutes with him. And I've got lots of callers online right now. And thanks for and hang in there with us. I will try to get through as many callers as I possibly can. And so thank you again.
My name is Cody, and you are listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, hosted by Cal Mez.
Cal Mez. Thank you for all those people who have who are on the line with us, and we also want to extend our special gratitude to Mr. Albert Damon. Yeah, hey, Mr. Damon, thank you for being with us again, and we're talking about 2013 Navajo Nation energy policy for the that has just been recently put into effect. I guess that's the best way to put it. Just kind of give you some background information. Number one is that the Navajo Nation energy policy is not law, but it is a set of guiding principle for the Navajo Nation when it comes to any type of energy activities. And so Mr. Damon, welcome.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get back to the topic. We brought it to the point where we did have public hearings, council delegates, the assumption that they shared with their communities. And so now we're going to go ahead and fast forward to the business aspect of it. And that is the because of the energy policy, and it appears that the spinoff from that was the purchase of the Navajo mine. And the Navajo mine, in order for it to be operated, you had to have an entity in place to operate a mine, something of this magnitude, which is, in my opinion, is a huge, monstrous project. And so, therefore, INTEC came into the picture. Am I right? Am I anywhere close to the picture here, Mr. Damon?
Yes, that is true. INTEC is the Navajo Transitional Energy Company or Corporation.
Yeah,
and
they
need to be put in place to complete the purchase of that mine. Again, you are correct. We did buy the mine, and therefore we own that thing now. And it's been the policy of the Navajo Nation, specifically in the energy policy, that the Navajo Nation wants to be owner now. We're no longer going to be getting royalties and leases revenues. We want to be a player. So as ownership, that is the direction that we want to go now. We've been down this road for, decades in just being having leasehold interest, lease royalties, coming back to the nation and never an owner. So now we're stepping up. So we own the thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to go to this than just the initial purchase, but it is true. We did buy the mine.
Yeah. So while you were considering buying this mine, because I read a press release which was issued from the office of the president, which I felt was really right in the right direction in terms of that the Navajo Nation was thinking about purchasing a mine, and while purchasing the mine, the end result would be is the Navajo Nation to merge a Navajo business with this, and it sounds like there has been a change of plans.
Essentially, the INTEC was a pathway to the purchase. It had to be created. Navajo didn't have a company or an entity or an enterprise, for that matter, to deal with such matters. So we had to create it. And so INTEC was devised, and they put it into place, and it worked. Got to remember that the Navajo Nation on this angle was trying to save the jobs. A lot of tremendous work that the Navajos are doing up there at the mine, and there's tremendous potential to continue that. But in the reality of it all, the BHP folks who sold it, they are getting out of coal. They're not into the coal application anymore. And so they wanted to get out. And Navajo Nation being so rich with coal, I mean, we have 300 years of coal. And if we can't burn it, what do you do with it? So in a sense, we had to create this company to get it started. But the reality is that we're saving jobs and we're creating avenues. Again, the INTEC company can manage the coal mine and develop it. But what we are after is that the Navajo Nation's resources of coal needs to be addressed since we are regulated by the Fed on how we burn coal to produce electricity. That is the driving force of shutting down the power plant. But if you shut down the power plants, more jobs go away. Lucrative money does not come to the nation anymore. So there is that still on the horizon. But in purchasing the mine, at least we save those jobs and we're able to look at other alternatives for the coal. And the energy policy addresses coal to liquids technology or coal to gasification. When you change coal into diesel fuel, jet fuel, gasoline, other things like that, there are those technologies there. So in the overall picture, we still want to be able to market that resource. And so that's why the Shelley administration has been so adamant on trying to save that mine, save the jobs, save the revenue coming in, and also develop alternatives for that resource. Again, it's huge. The coal reserves go from Kienta all the way to Crown Point through. Essentially, we have some of the best coal in the world but we can't burn it. So we're going to have to find alternative ways. And purchasing the mine, going from coal to liquids or coal to gasoline or diesel, that's kind of the bigger picture. And we are doing efforts now. People have probably heard about the Thoreau Rail Port in Thoreau. The Division of Economic Development has engaged the Burlington Railroad to access their transcontinental rail line, which is their superhighway of rail transportation. They are bringing their own cash, $9 million, to connect onto that thing. The Thoreau Rail Port will be the connection to that. In future, this is phase one. Phase two is the transloading facility at Nappy Farms, about 1,000 acres up there, to develop the ability to take crude oil or others to transport it onto a rail situation and rail it down to Thoreau. That's phase three, is the actual rail line. All of this is major league. It gets the Navajo Nation away from burning coal to supplying coal to other parts of the world and also changing it into fuel. Burlington Railroad has told us if we can change it into jet fuel, they'll take it to all the military bases in the country, no question. So that's the sense that we're looking at NTEC in the mine. But in the reality of it all, we have to adjust. If these things start closing down, these being the power plants, as people may be aware, there in the Farmington region, Shiprock area, there used to be, what, 5 to 6 coal plants just producing power. Now some of those have been shut down. The ones on Navajo, there was 4 generating plants in that facility. They're going to shut down some of them and keep the newest ones. Again, these things were built in 1970s and 60s. That technology, you know, is a little old now. And so we have to address it. In doing so, NTEC was devised to help us do that. But in the overall picture, we are trying to save the jobs and save the revenue that comes into the nation. If you take away the coal applications, the power plant royalties, the mine royalties, the Navajo Nation coffers, you know, that there's a lot of money that comes from that. And if you stop that, if it stops, oh, boy, you know, we're going to be in a world of hurt. There's nobody has developed a solution of what happens then. It's the task of economic development to see how we get through that. I think the writing's on the wall. Coal is looked at differently, but the promising part of this is that the Obama administration has had coal subsidies for Native American tribes. In his coal applications in his administration, he's opened a door for Indian tribes to develop their coal resources through the new technologies. And so we are walking through that door with him. So that's in the long run, that's what we want to do. Mr. Nitz.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, those are, I think that in terms of a basic business structure, you know, those are all absolutely some of the aspiration of any given business, is that you have a product and you have identified a target market and you're going to make the connection between those and what are going to be the benefits for the business owners. And in this particular case, it's the Navajo Nation. I mean, you know, all of that sounds wonderful, and we talk about economic development. And a couple of years ago, as you well know, Mr. Damon, we started the Navajo Chamber of Commerce. And it was basically a group that is, you know, if people know about a chamber, a chamber is a group of people who happen to own business have come together under one goal, and that is to spur economic development. And so in this case, we wanted to start a relationship with the Navajo Nation, fortify it and strengthen it, and eventually get to the point where the Navajo Nation is instituting and upholding the Navajo Business Opportunity Act. And that is basically saying that if there's Navajo money here to be spent in subcontracting or whatever, or if it's a contract, that it should be given to Navajo first. And so having said that, we talk about economic development, and I've heard that coming from the president's office and the proponents of the purchase of the mine. So how and where does the small businessman or the Navajo business fit into this mine purchase picture?
Thank you for bringing up the chamber, and that is a great thing for the Navajo Nation. As you can understand, that this country, the United States, was not built on the back of major league corporations. It was the mom and pop stores that started these things, started the city growth, started the infrastructure planning, all of those parts. So it is critical that the private business start stepping up. And that's what's the big missing piece on Navajo, you know, because if you look at all the major employers on Navajo, who is it? It's the nation. It's the school districts. It's, you know, the utilities. Private business is need to get a foothold to bring that up, because they're the entrepreneurs, and we want to craft that. We want to be able to facilitate that, get Navajo entrepreneurs to start businesses. In relation to the coal, there's things you need to do for the coal companies that Navajo companies can do, and they should get in the league with this, and it's Navajo preference-based, and that is, you know, somebody's got to supply them the boots. Somebody's got to give them the gloves. You know, the burrito lady will probably make a killing over there. Well, all those parts need to fuel that company. They buy gas. They buy clothes. They buy supplies. We need to get into that niche so that Navajo companies can come in and fill that void. We have a thing at the Economic Development Office, which is a computer program. If you load in an entity or an organization or a thing like a coal mine, it figures out all the necessary needs of that coal mine. And what we want to do with that particular software is show the Navajo entrepreneurs and the business folks that, look, these guys need paper towels. You know, they need paint. They need these things. Why don't we supply them? Why are we not stepping up and filling those? We can do that. We have the software to do that. So there are parts of that overall purchase that we can gain on as business folks. And I'm sure the business out there are saying, well, how do we get into that? How do we do that? And it's Navajo preference-based. And so essentially, if you can do those services, and it's a gamut. I mean, there's probably tens of thousands of specific items that mine needs to operate. You know, tires, oil, you know, all those things that businesses require to stay in business, we should supply. Therefore, the chamber, all those folks, we need to coordinate with them so that they have the opportunity to fill those niches. And being preference-based, we want to turn them loose and tell them, you know, make us proud, do the best, get a good product. That's the key is business. So on Navajo Nation, private business is struggling because, two, there's no resources. Three, there's limited supply of things. And so they have to go outside to get resources. But we want to change that. These types of applications are integral to that. And I applaud the businesses. Step up, guys. You know, you can make a difference in all of this. And I want to help. Again, there's the Business Industrial Development Fund for business startup. We have that. We have it here. We need to be able to do those things. So in the mine purchase, there's a plethora of jobs and available services that they need to acquire to exist, and we should fill that void. And again, not only is the mine, we can dial in a hospital. Say let's take the Fort Defiance Hospital. You know, they need needles. They need plasticware. They need stuff. And so why can't we supply them with our business folks? That's where we need to start looking at these ventures. And I'm just all for the business chambers to get going and organized and ready, because we are a burgeoning economy here. We're going to start making moves. The Navajo Nation is set to do these things. So we want to be able to do that. The businesses are tremendously incorporated to be able to help us. Again, the infrastructure's got to go in. So all of that kind of, and that's where government helps. Because if you let the government, like me, economic development, get involved, I bring a whole host of stuff. I mean, I've got the DOJ, I've got the council, I've got rules. You know, that's hard to jump through. Because people think that development on Navajo Nation is slow. It's because of the rules. And if we can be able to invent better ways for business to get into there, again, this country, this Navajo Nation will just take off. Mr. Ness.
I totally agree. You know, I think there's a, you know, here's my own personal philosophy. Again, this is the world according to Cal Nez. I mean, this is my little world, and whether it matters to a lot of people out there or not, but this is what I feel. There's three components to the dynamics of the Navajo Nation population. That is that, number one, the Navajo Nation government. You're either an elected official or you're a permanent employee. And then there's a grassroots group out there, and in a lot of cases they call themselves the traditionalists. And so, to me, looking from the outside in, although I feel like I've been an active participant in Navajo Nation's government process for 27 years of my own business, but I think there's another group that is seriously needs some recognition. And that's why that I bring these issues into the Navajo Nation government. I'm finding these two groups, if they're on the government side, of course they're going to advocate and see, make sure that everything happens that they've instituted, make sure that it goes through the process. And then you've got the opposition group who are there saying no. But there's a segment out here, and that's the people who are wanting to get into, they want to be heard, that we're the people that you told us to go and learn the ways of the white man off the Navajo Nation, and we're bringing back our, quote, expertise to the Navajo Nation. But we can't get into the system because everybody's protected of their job within the Navajo Nation government. And so we're sitting out here with huge resumes. And or we start a business, but now we have to encounter our community with the grassroots level who are basically telling us no. So where do we go from here? And this is the group that I know wants to be heard because they are for entrepreneurship. They want to be self-reliant. They want to be self-sufficient. And whether they live on the Navajo Nation as well as off the Navajo Nation. And so that's there, and that's good to hear. And I would probably, knowing that the Navajo Nation is moving forward, that's good to hear, Mr. Damon. And so for all those listeners, I'm sure that's very good news. So here again, you know, are we going to be placed in a position where we're just going to say no, but we don't have any solution to replace the jobs that are needed for economic development for the Navajo Nation? These are things for us to think about. Now, you brought up a very good point. That is that, okay, well, you know, there's entities out here that are owned by the Navajo Nation that could possibly give all sorts of products and services that the Navajo people can bring to the table. So very good concept. But here's my question to you, Mr. Damon, and this is kind of on a different subject, but still within the business area, and that is that what's going to be functional or what's going to make this concept work when how much of the Navajo Nation gaming enterprises, we have, what, four facilities now? How much are those businesses using Navajo? Do you have any statistics on that?
I don't have it right at my fingertips, but they are Navajo preference based. Being a Navajo enterprise, the Navajo law still applies. Navajo preference based hiring, and that is also for business. And I would surely recommend to Mr. Watchman that they hire the best qualified Navajos to handle those things and get them up and running. That is my opinion, my decision there, but they should be following the law because they are Navajo enterprise, and all the enterprises follow Navajo preference.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how many Navajo businesses are supplying the electricity, or I mean the light bulbs. How many Navajo businesses are supplying the actual artwork for the gift shop?
It's true. I think the gaming enterprise engage the artisans. If you've been to Twin Arrows, that whole thing is full of Navajo art. It's beautiful. But essentially, they are bound by Navajo law as an enterprise to hire Navajo preference in hiring. They are unique in some areas because of the background checks that have to occur in the gaming world. That's just part of their business. So a lot of that stuff, some of the folks don't qualify. But in reality, there should be enough Navajo members out there to fill those positions. And I would love to see them, getting better at it and getting the recognition they need and getting these jobs and getting these contracts. Because a lot of money leaves the Reds. What we found out in our studies is that over $1 billion in taxes go to off-res businesses. We go over there to buy stuff. I do it, And so why? Because they're not here. They're not on Navajo. To alter that fact is that we need help from the chapter level to give us land-based planning issues. A good example is Chin Lee. Look at Chin Lee. You come in from the north, you come in from the south, you come in from the east, and that whole area there is a tourist mecca. We should be milking that for all it's worth. And what happens is that the landholders or the grazing permittee folks don't allow us to have access to the main drag. I would love to be able to have retail centers, shops, available land for planning to get those things in there, but they refuse to let us have the land. So the land issue is tremendous, and the grazing folks have tremendous power. They can say, no, we're not going to let you graze on our property. And if you look at downtown Chin Lee, there's really nothing to graze on. It's dirt. But we can turn that into a Denny's. We can turn that into a bed and breakfast that makes money. And those entrepreneurs can set up. And one little lady talked to me in Rama. She wants to do a bed and breakfast. And I thought, that's a wonderful idea. Get your regulations set up. Get incorporated. Do these things. But that's the key, is the land-based holdings by the chapter. They need to be able to release those to us to make commercial corridors so that they can develop them. Otherwise, you get hodgepodge developments that go in. The infrastructure costs go way up. And nobody wants to come in. We engaged Walmart.
Yeah.
We asked Walmart to come to the nation. We had sites in Chin Lee and also Kayenta. They refused. Why? The non-Indian towns on the res lobbied against us, saying, oh, goodness, they're going to take all our revenue away. And we told Walmart, no way, we're going to fuel your interest because these folks are traveling 2 hours to get to your Walmart. And if we can make that a 30-minute run, you'll get more money. So in the end, a lot of people are working against us. But as a nation, it's the same old story. Is it a crab in the bucket story? Crabs try to get out of the bucket. The other crabs just pull them back down. And so what I found out in our dealings with the Alaskans was the kinglet crab story, where they told me that back in the day, 40 years ago, the kinglets found out that all the kinglet crabs, if they can climb up the side of the walls and hold hands, everybody can get out. Everyone. So what does that mean? That means that the Navajo Nation people need to collectively get together to hold hands and get out of this poverty and stricken areas, that we can make this happen. And it's true. We have enough educated folks that come back to us, and we can do this. So it's my recommendation that the businesses band together. We can make this nation work, and we can drive it ourselves and not have any other influence. This government policy we had on earlier, the three phases, That's a BIA interpretation for us. It doesn't work for us. We need to develop our own. All the other tribes have unique situations that go in with their own innate people. This was given to us, or they would say, oh, you Navajos, this is the best thing for you. Do it this way.
Yeah.
But they did not realize the cultural applications in developing our government innate to the people. And so that is an issue. But as far as economic development is concerned, we want small business to step up. We want the chapters to give us land to allow those businesses to have a site, to lease that ability. And you know what happens after that? Taxes. Gross receipt taxes come in. That's money generated by our own individuals spending things at the market. Those help us fuel infrastructure, police, telecommunications, all those things that governments are supposed to provide. We need to be able to have the private enterprise be able to pull that through. And as far as the government, we need to nurture it. So what that means for us is giving tax incentives. Get them here. Why does nobody want to bring $10 million and drop it on the nation to build something? That's the key. And so we've addressed those issues in economic development. Two things come up real quick, sovereignty and trust land status. Sovereignty is addressed by American arbitration rules. Most of the companies outside Navajo now feel more comfortable with that. And trust land. When you put money into trust land from an outside interest, you can't get it back out. So how do you develop that? So the Division of Economic Development, we've developed a land reform policy. Been sitting at the Attorney General's office for 3 years. It turns out that policy is working. What we found is economic development, there's an underground real estate market. People are actually selling their home sites, selling their homes. And when they sell, the Navajo Nation makes nothing on closing, nothing on taxes, and it's going on now. And so there is a real estate market here. So how to develop that and make it into an equitable situation, that's what the land reform proposal does. If your listeners are hearing this, this has been at the Department of Justice for 3 years. It turns your home sites into trust deeds of trust where any bank will mortgage your property. You're able to leverage it. The key to this thing is banking. Navajos do not have a bank system. We use others. So in the end, the value of the land is not measured by these outside banks. Being trust banks, they don't do it. If we had our own bank that can mortgage these things, set up the mortgage leases, that would be great. And in the event, if the Navajos default, the resources go back to the Navajo Nation-owned bank, and it gets sold or auctioned to another Navajo entity. That is economic development, because you're putting the money in their pocket, in their wallet. You're not giving it to council. You're not giving it to, you know, the tribe.
All right, Mr. Damon. Well, I totally agree with that. But it's absolutely incredible that that's wonderful. That's great. And I'm looking forward to those ideologies, and I think that a lot of people are very, very interested. And we only have a few minutes. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. And so for the next few minutes, if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Damon, I'd like to take this back to, and I appreciate you addressing some of my own pet peeves here for the Navajo business and entrepreneurs. So hopefully to give some urgency to the Navajo people that we need to get into business, start thinking more of a employer mindset than always being employees. So nothing wrong with being an employee, but that we need to start thinking, beginning that real powerful paradigm shift. So so I appreciate that. So if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Damon, I'd like to have you take some questions from the callers. And I've got a caller online with us, and I can hear a lot of background information or noise. And would you please turn your sound down or something like that? But welcome, caller. How are you?
Hello?
Yes, you're online.
Hello? Okay. Well, I'd like to say good evening to you folks, and I appreciate the gentleman staying late and answering our questions. Well, my name is Olin Kiyomi. I'm coming from Tehachapi, New Mexico. I'm an elected farm board official, also the District 14 council president in my district, and also the Democratic Party caucus for Gallup-McKinley County. Also, I'm a member of that, and I'm a 12-year veteran of the United States military. So I'm back here trying to incorporate my people as far as providing services to them. And I am educated. I do have an associate's degree in liberal arts, but long story short, but it's really hard for economic development to progress on the Navajo Nation as I see it. I spent about maybe a good year and a half and still no job when I came back from the military. None. The two Purple Hearts and the Bronze Stars, it doesn't mean nothing under the Navajo Nation. Veterans Preference Act, Navajo Preference Act. Even having a degree, and the truth used to be just more equivalent to a high school diploma, it seems. And the experience that I got in the military does not go forth with the Navajo Nation. They don't see it as an experience. They see it as something you did, and that was it. So coming from a veteran's perspective, especially an educated one that did his tour and duty for his nation, still hasn't been provided those services yet. And what I do ask for those services from the VA Department of the Navajo Nation, I'm given the runaround. Now, when you do want to start your own, let's say, business, a car wash, a laundromat, grazing permits come into hand all the time. I heard stories at agency meetings blows my mind. There was this one gentleman in Chile that wanted to put up McDonald's there. The dude that had his grazing permit sold it $5,000 but never got it back because the guy didn't understand that you cannot do that. You cannot sell your grazing permit for land leases. So the guy that wanted to build a McDonald's lost out on $5,000 and gave it to the man that owned the grazing permit. It's small things like this that just really ticks me off as far as land reform. We need to do something here on the Navajo Nation as far as entrepreneurship, as far as finding jobs for our educated Navajos and especially our veterans. The thing that ticks me off is that they tell us, they set up these scholarships and tell us to go out and do something. The number one reason why I left the reservation was because I wanted to make something of myself. There was nothing here for me. And I come from a military family. That really ticks me off when I come back home and I see third world conditions. I seen the streets of Iraq getting paved right now in Afghanistan, getting new hospitals and new schools. When I come back over here, I'm receiving contract care, sitting in the IHS hospital with PTSD, chronic health problems, and so forth. I'm sitting there all day not getting seen. And prescription drugs that I need, they're not there. I have to go to Walgreens or Walmart. They have to pay my copay to get those. So you see all these things the nation is not addressing. And when it comes down to our leaders failing their leadership, it really comes down to whether you follow Navajo Nation law or do you follow KEH. The majority, 9 times out of 10, it's KEH because we address each other in that way. Shiche, Shanila, Shania, we address each other like that. Like that Speaker Nay said, I don't know, I'm surprised my brother. He said, my brother. When you're in the political and professional world, he's not your brother. He is the elected official coming from those chapters that are saying, you need to get out of office and step down. All Elton Joe Shepard is doing is answering to his people as far as the removal and non-confidence in the speaker. That's all Mr. Elton Joe Shepard is doing. So we kind of have to play that fine line and play in the gray areas to where when is it appropriate to incorporate KEH or when is it appropriate to actually implement the law. The grassroots people say you have to follow your moral standards as a leader. I think that's what Elton Joe Shepard is trying to get at the grassroots level.
I appreciate
that. Thank you. I appreciate that very much, Cal. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's an awesome show. Glad I got on. Once again, Thank you for staying out late. You guys have a good night.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Damon, I guess, you heard one of the callers, it's pretty much a statement. So I've got another caller on the line. Do you have a question for Mr. Damon? Hello, are you there? 928-514. You're on air right now. Hello? I don't know what's going on there. And then I'll bring in another caller. Hello, caller. You're on air right now, so can you hear me? Please, people out there, even though I've got you on hold, be ready with your questions. I've got a person, you probably can hear me. Hello, do you have a question? Oh, they just hung up. So, we'll try this person again. Hello, caller. Are you online? Hello? I'm not sure what's going on with these people. They just hung up again. Okay. And this caller. Hello? Can you hear me?
Take it down. Kel, are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, Kel, hey. I have some questions for Mr. Damon. I always do. I'm calling out of San Diego, but... Anyways, Mr. Damon, when we purchased that mine, we dropped $1 a ton, and then you're saying that we purchased a mine for employment to save jobs, and what I want to know on that is if the plant shuts down, what's guaranteed for the workers? And most of the mine workers are union, so are they going to continue being have an agreement with the unions? Also, with Mays, does he have...
Let him answer that question. Mr. Robbins, let him answer that question, and then you can ask the second one after that.
And that's a great question. Thank you for the call. And I used to live in San Diego, actually, North Park. What the purchase does, it allows the mine to stay open. And again, the 2016 date of the APS shutdown of the two plants. There's four plants in it. Two of them are going to shut down. They are dismantling them now. The two of them are going to continue with retrofits to their technologies. So it'll continue on with that. So we're of the understanding that the facility, the power plant itself, will continue to operate. But what we are after with the mine, again, as we explained, was We want to change it to gas and diesel fuel so that we can supply the country with energy. Therefore, the long run is that if we can get the subsidies set up by the federal government and the Obama administration to kick in for us on Navajo, that allows us to be able to operate that mine for quite a long time, I would say another 40 years. But the reality is, if we can change coal into something else, and the technology is there, that's what we want to do and keep that mine operating. The union, I don't know too much about them, but I'm pretty sure if they would be on this call, they would say, yes, we want to keep that mine open, keep it operating, and keep the workforce intact. We'd love to be able to do that. So in my opinion, that power plant will continue to move forward. Again, there's moves going on also that you may not be aware of. Navajo Utility, the NTUA, has partnered with Terragen Company, an energy company, to provide natural gas to that power plant. They are setting up a site, which we were helping them with the chapter, to look at. There's this existing gas line about 8 miles from that power plant. So they're wanting to be able to set up a gasification-type facility to augment the coal. What happens is if that power plant ever did shut down, that grid work that goes to California, Nevada, will be wide open for capacity. Right now it's full.
Okay.
So they'll be able to put that in and do it. But it should be open. It should stay open.
Mr. Robin.
Yes. I have a few questions. I'm going to try to make it quick. What is the overhead, the total overhead when the tribe takes over? And will the tribe afford all the payroll, the equipment, everything else? I mean, most of that is BHPs anyway, so do we buy
Two questions. Yeah, two questions. Mr. Damon, if you can make those quick also.
Yes, those equipments will be leased. If you own the equipment, the depreciation goes quick. So leasing them makes more sense for us. So we'll be leasing those equipment.
Mr. Robin.
Okay, well, is BHP leasing it or are they owning the equipment?
Unknown on that part. That's a good question for Mr. Steve Gunderson of NTEC. It's my understanding that most of these companies that have those lease those equipment. Because you got to remember that the Navajo Nation put in a tax for equipment. Back in the day, on the original coal leases, we couldn't get the royalties we wanted, so we did a possessory interest tax, which taxes equipment. And what it did, back then it was Pittsburgh Midway Coal Company back here in San Benito. But what did the company do? They sold those equipments off to another company in Chicago and leased it back, so they didn't have to pay the tax. So those companies that large lease those equipment. They don't buy them.
Well, yes. One last question. I have a lot of questions, but one last question.
Go ahead. Keep asking him.
Okay. Well, with Nays, with his legal, whatever he's going through right now, is it still legal for him to make binding agreements with corporations that want to come in? And most of these corporations, like BHP, has a history of international violations of human rights, animal rights, and environmental destruction. What's your feeling on that?
My opinion is a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but it's an ethical issue, in my opinion. It's ethics. Do you continue or do you not with these clouds over you? Usually, on the outside, especially in the federal government, if somebody is brought upon these type of charges, they usually are put on administrative leave and until the charges are resolved or he's exonerated. In this case, in my opinion, it's an ethical thing. So the Ethics and Rules Committee needs to set something up in the Navajo Nation that if and when this ever occurs again, these folks are put on administrative leave, with pay, mind you, until they are resolved.
Okay.
Nothing like that exists on Navajo. So right now, Mr. Nays is there. It's different for us, but that's my opinion. I really can't comment on that one because it's a little bit out of my wheelhouse here.
Yeah,
okay,
I appreciate them. Hey, Mr. Robbins, I'm going to I will keep you live, but just go ahead, and I'm going to bring another call in. And,
that's fine.
So, and I'll bring you back in and while you're thinking about your thoughts here. And so we have another caller that's online. Do you have a question for Mr. Albert Damon? Hello? You're on there. I guess they're not listening as well. So, hello? So let's see. I want to bring in another caller. Hello, caller. How are you? Can you hear me? Boy, I tell you, I'm not sure what's going on here, but, not very many people are sound like they're paying attention to their phone. Hello, caller 41809. You're live on Politics on the Navajo Nation. That's interesting. So, Mr. Robbins, are you still with us?
Yes, yes, I have plenty of questions.
Well, I know
nobody
you have some questions, so I'll give some time back to you. And, Mr. Damon, I appreciate you being with us, and I'm sorry, I'm probably, we're all tapping into your evening rest for tomorrow night, tomorrow, so I apologize about that, but thank you very much. I think a lot of people are very much interested out here. So, Mr. Robbins.
Okay, Mr. Damon, you had some things here about public hearing of all these meetings, four different places and two others. Where can I get a hold of as public records of people that signed in and attended these meetings and who voted, you know, what the vote were and so forth? I mean, where can I go to get those? And maybe you
Let
can
me
answer
ask
that.
Let me answer the question.
Sure. The public record of all the comments were tabulated by the Division of Natural Resources, Mr. Fred White's division, and Ms. Michelle Henry was assigned to that task. And I would recommend contacting Mr. Fred White, because I'm pretty sure he's got those records on digital so that it can be shared. They were recorded. Ms. Henry did a wonderful job doing that. So they are there, but I don't have them. It would be with the Natural Resources Division. So Mr. Fred White would have those.
Okay. On your EPA, the study, when was the last time EPA stepped on BHP site before the purchase?
Boy, I don't have privy to that information.
Okay.
I'd have to defer to Mr. Stephen Etzity, the EPA director on that one. I don't know if they were, you know, when they went on site or what they did there.
Okay, because the only reason why I'm saying is West Virginia had a leak, a chemical leak that would bring dirty coal up to standard where it contaminated the water. All that ash that's down below that you did, BHP and the Navajo tribe now, do you guys have any lining on the bottom and the side walls to protect the water source down below? And how are you packing this? Are you packing it? Because you can't just pack ash because you have sinkholes or like quicksand. It might turn into quicksand later on, which would also still be a hazard in many ways. Health-wise, I mean, we have many issues on this that the leaders are not really listening to the community. And I'm speaking out for the community because I'm from Western Navajo. We say we're not supporting this. So, anyways, can you explain on that?
Well, that's a really technical question on how they address their operations. I am not privy of how they do that. That's not part of what we do at economic development, but essentially I'm pretty sure that Mr. Steve Gunderson would know that in NTEC, and BHP I'm pretty sure is doing something with it, but I'm not aware of what they do with the ash or how they address that. But what I do know is that in the Page plants we are using it to make concrete blocks from NHA, but unknown on exactly what they do with that one. I'm not privy to that information.
Okay,
well,
Mr. Robbins, I've got another caller that's on the line.
Okay, that's fine.
If you wouldn't mind. Hello, caller. You're the area code is 714. Hello, are you on? Can you hear me?
Boy, Cal, you're batting 1,000 tonight, huh?
Boy, I tell you. Hello, I've got you online. So I guess they're hung tight. Something happened there. And I've got another caller. Hello, caller. Are you online?
Hello, Calness. This is Renee Yellowhorse. I'm calling from Western Navajo Reservation. I do listen to the show just because you have some major players on there regarding some issues with the Western Navajo. And glad that some people are calling in to really give them the hard questions that some people seem not to want to come in and ask them. But that's my only comment, and I am listening in on the phone because my laptop is out of service. And you mentioned the disenfranchised, highly educated Navajos that came back to the reservation. I happen to be one of those. 30 years, Navajo Nation paid full scholarship ride for my bachelor's degree in business administration. I went to economic development. I went to apply for a job there, and they told me they had no interest in small business. So I did not get the position. So that just goes to show the extent. I don't know why the turnaround. Maybe it's somebody else that's in office now. But even if we do go over there now, we see all the red tape. We see all the seeming not wanting to help small business. So I don't see where that comes in, Mr. Damon. That's all I have to say on that. If you want to answer that, you can go ahead and answer that. I'll go on next. I'm going to continue to listen.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Ms. Yellowhorse. Small business is on our radar. We want to develop that. And I don't know what they did to you before, but it's not the case. We are pro-business on Navajo. We want you to get started. And what we have to help you is the Business Industrial Development Fund. It's a little kitty that
Yes, Mr. Damon, I want to question you. I do have another question. Why does your small business, why is a person that is employed with the Navajo Nation with the small business doing on a club committee in Bottoway Gap pushing the Escalade project, which is not a small business? Answer that for me, and that'll be it. I'm just going to listen from that.
On the Escalade project, I'm not aware of anybody in small business that's on that team. I'm not aware of that. The Escalade project is something that's a little bit different. It's not small business. This is Major League Resort. But small business is part of it. Yeah. Again, like we were saying earlier, you know, we need to fuel that thing with other parts that we can supply. Somebody's got to give them the towels. Somebody's got to take the trash out. You know, somebody's got to do the paperwork. All that stuff, I am fully confident that Navajo entrepreneurs can do that. And that's how it sets up. And that is Navajo preference in hiring. But I don't recall anybody in my small business department doing anything like that on the Escalade.
That's interesting. We have another caller. Hello, caller. 7410 or 9 or 0. Hello. Are you there? I guess they're not sure if they're listening. So, let's see. Let me try to, okay. So I appreciate, Mr. Robbins, you being with us as well. I think that you have some specific questions just to close up the show with. Any more questions for Mr. Damon?
Yes. Who are the consultants used to purchase this mine? And I don't think you answered a dollar drop per ton on the coal. And when you put this
one at a time, one at a time.
Go ahead, two.
Mr. Damon.
Go ahead.
Okay, unknown. I don't have privy on the dollar drop per ton. In dealing with BHP before this purchase, they were telling me through closed circuits. I never did get a direct answer from them. But it was about $26 a ton that they were trying to sell it for. That much I know. That much I know. BHP was, when I engaged them, they were very, very, very close to divulge that information. But we got it, and it's about $26 a ton.
Second question.
Okay. The second answer was the second question was what was the second question? I didn't, okay, throw me off. But anyways, when you decide to put this railway in with BS&F, with the port, you said that you're going to sell it internationally. What international market are you looking at? And the problem I have with the dollar drop in tons is when it goes elsewhere, it goes on the euro currency. So we're kind of losing out in a way once we extract and export. Can you explain? I mean, can you tell me what market are we looking at other than raw coal?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Thank you. That's a good question. The Russians have been here. The Chinese have been here. The Indian, not feather, the Indian, India, they've been here. And those are the main players that have come to court us for our coal development. But again, you got to remember what we did with this rail port is that what I found to get this product to them was either through Houston, Texas, or Mexico. And the Mexico run seemed to be a little bit easier for us to do. And those particular countries, especially the Russians, they came looking for it, and we were going to export those to them. How we want to do this, though, is not the coal. You got to remember, we want to change it to diesel fuel and jet fuel. And that is a consumer market for us. It makes a lot of sense. And that's if we can change it into those commodities, we can sell it to the people here in the States. Again, the military will buy all our jet fuel. They've already told us that already. But,
right.
Yes, that's how we're going to do it. Those are the target markets.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
I appreciate that. Well, just, Mr. Robbins, if you wouldn't mind, hold on one second.
Okay.
I've got that caller is pretty persistent. I don't know if they hear me. Hello, can you hear me, caller? 714-809. Are you there? I've given this person 4 or 5 chances here. Hello. So anyway, so I'll go ahead and just disconnect them again. So, but anyway, so I appreciate that. And Mr. Robbins, let me ask you a question here. While you're thinking, what is exactly your position in terms of this mine purchase?
My position on the mine purchase, I think it was illegally done. I don't think the people bought the mine. I think the tribal government bought the mine with the people's money. So as far as I'm concerned, the people have a lot of say-so on the market and what is going to happen with this. We waive every right to take BHP's, the contamination, the pollution, and even APS, and now we got another company walking away, El Paso Gas, was not paying their bills, and then you got bills still outstanding from right away to water use to reclamation, you name it, it has it. And the other problem I have is doing business with the international economic terrorist, business. You know, I have a problem with that because there's many cases internationally where BHP is being sued. They've bought politicians, they've bought the police force, they've tortured people to get what they want. So why would we give them the green light? Everybody says there's a time frame, okay? The time frame is BHP is leaving. They're across the street over San Juan power plant, or they're supplying San Juan power plant. So where are they going to go? So this whole thing is staged, and it stinks. And I would like to, on behalf of the Navajo Nation, I want a federal investigation done on this whole deal with SRP, with NGS, Peabody, and so forth.
All right, Mr. Robbins. I appreciate you sharing that. And just out of fairness to everybody that's involved here, and this comes back to my initial question to everybody is that, okay, it's one thing that it's to say no, okay, But what do you recommend in the place of this? What is your recommendation as a solution for economic development having something to do with the mind? What's your alternative on that?
Well, my recommendation is we need to sit on this coal, but we can't come up with some clean energy, and it's already standing in place, ready to go when the other one shuts down. Nobody will lose their job. It's going to create more jobs. On top of that, if BHP want a small business to come in before the purchase by Navajo Tribe, BHP should have been using Navajo business all the way from the start. See, that's what I have a problem with. And I want that changed, you know. And as a consultant, I mean, we borrowed money from BHP to do certain things along the way of the purchase of this mine. It's a conflict for me. I have a conflict. It's conflictual for me. There's, you know what, it's all set up. Even our trustees involved. So our trustee, we have a treaty with that's supposed to, supposed to protect the people, okay? That's the trustee. That's the U.S. government. So why is the U.S. government with corporation and the Navajo tribe, you know, they're all in cahoots at the moment. And this whole thing's...
Well, having said that, you know, I'm sure that we can sit here and say, okay, you know, so-and-so could be in cahoots, but let me ask you a question. In this particular case, it sounds like, you know, I mean, here, you know, like I said, I'm a business advocate. I'm trying to find out where it is that the Navajo people are going to have economic development. And I'm sorry to be taking some of your time, Mr. Damon, but let me, I just want to find out what it is. We say no to this. What do you recommend in its place to be able to make that money, have money generated so economic development can move? What do you think it's going to be?
Green energy. We can also develop the Boakias Ranch. If people want to buy property, we don't need to be selling pieces of allotments on a reservation. That's not what it's for. And there's going to be a period that nobody is going to be able to afford this because where are all the jobs? All the jobs are, you know, all the factories and everything are going out to the country. The only thing we're bringing in is labor. We're importing labor. We're not making new business. If these corporations want to go elsewhere, then they should follow the company. We can create new businesses. That's how we regrow. We've got to start from the core.
Okay. I appreciate that. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Mr. Robbins. He's one of my listeners, and I appreciate it, and I'm going to go ahead and turn the time over to Mr. Albert Damon for him to address this. We've got 5 minutes left, and what do you got to say to that, Mr. Damon?
Thank you, Cal, and thank you for your time, and thank you for having me. We are doing it. Essentially, we are not just doing coal. We are looking at other things, too. What we had to do, because nobody wants to invest in Indian country, we had to invent ways to invest in Indian country. So we set up our own EB-5 center. It's a regional center for development, and that gets international folks green cards here when they invest into our projects. That's another one we're doing. The other one we set up, too, to do this is the Narbona Growth Fund. The Narbona Growth Fund is a Section 17 federal charter. It's designed for manufacturing so that any company that comes on to Navajo underneath this corporation umbrella will be exempt from federal taxes. Never before have Navajo had these opportunities. So we developed it at Economic Development. We set it up. It's now at the Southwest Solicitor's Office. It's been there since last year, July. So if you guys want to raise hell with them, do it because we need it. And what that does for us, it allows companies like Honda and Toyota to come on to Navajo to develop their products tax-free. So that's one of the things we're doing there. Also, we're engaging Smith Electric Vehicles to build electric vehicles on Navajo at the Church Rock site. So we are getting in negotiations with them to do that. And that is a forward-thinking opportunity because electric vehicles are the wave of the future. and now we'll be able to produce it. This company came in and gave us exclusive rights to the United States for a master licensing facility. We are wanting to do that. So those things are going on. There's a lot more to it. I would love to explain more for you, but essentially in 5 minutes, those are the two examples that I can point out that we are doing it. You haven't heard about it because we're still in negotiations with them. The Dharmboda Growth Fund, that is a great piece of work. That allows us to compete with everybody else. Because you got to remember, if you guys are a company outside the nation wanting to do business with the nation, you got to pay federal tax, you got to pay your state tax if you're outside the nation, and then you got to pay Navajo tax. So the three-tier tax system glitches people out. The profits won't make it work. It doesn't pencil out. So the Dharmboda Growth Fund allows us to alleviate that. So the recommendation to new companies coming onto the nation is that incorporate on Navajo. Start your business with the Navajo Corporation here with our business regulatory. That relieves the state tax. Incorporate underneath our bonus
we have about,
then you relieve yourself of the federal tax.
We have 2 minutes now. Yeah.
All you're left
and
with is the Navajo Corporation.
Yes. Yeah, just in closing, can you share the last 30 seconds about the energy policy? Your closing thoughts.
The energy policy was required. It evolved the Navajo Nation to an evolutionary player as a owner. That's what we're after. We want to own the thing. We don't want to be sitting on the side watching these people make millions and all we get is lease royalties. That's the business.
All right, Mr. Damon, I will let you go. I want to give thanks to him. Seriously, I mean, I know we have overstepped our welcome probably by an hour and a half because he first did tell me 30 minutes, but he's been here with us, and I appreciate it. And thank you, Mr. Damon.
No worries, Sir Cal, and thank you for having me and all the listeners out there. You know, we are pro-business. You know, come to Napa, we want to adjust. We want to help. So if there's problems, address them, and we can move forward. There's a lot of opportunity on Navajo, and we are ripe for business. So, yeah, we want to do it.
Okay. Thank you very much. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. And, again, my thanks to Mr. Albert Damon. Here's the opportunity for everybody to call in and to engage and to talk and to question. And I gave plenty of time to Mr. Lorenzo Robbins. And, you know, and it's okay that we have a dialogue. And that's absolutely welcome because we all have our opinions. We're advocate or against it. So, and that's okay. So, information to share, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much to everybody. And so here's my last 2 cents, and that is that in all cases, whether it's on the Navajo Nation or off the Navajo Nation, or is Western Navajo or Eastern, Northern, Southern, Central, wherever it is, you know, it's one thing to say no to certain things, but again, it's harder, in my opinion, to go out and to bring some solutions that are realistic to be able to bring to the table. And let's begin to talk, ladies and gentlemen. I think that this third segment of population who are sitting out here, we're wanting to be heard. We're wanting to bring, I was impressed with Mr. Lorenzo Robbins when he basically said, hey, you know what, these are some of my ideas. This is what I like to do. This is how I like to address them. You know, it's, and I do appreciate that. I think we need more people like that. I talked to a young lady today earlier, and she shared with me very much just like Renee that, you know what, I have this accolade of honors and a portfolio that I'm bringing back to the Navajo Nation, but I'm not there. So when you talk about buying a mine or starting to escalate, whatever it is, what is it and how are we going to package this whole segment together? And these are things that we need to be very much aware of. And so we need to be thinking. We need to be engaged. And, again, I want to thank Mr. Albert Damon for allowing us to have him for an extra hour and a half. And so while we're thinking about this, ladies and gentlemen, bottom line is this, there's opportunity out there. The only way that this opportunity is going to come about, let those happen. Those things are real. But shinde kode kode na sha hashin zade a jahut in the kode shakad na hate aj koi hun sta ro koi deshan nish kode ashwana kode ashishin da deshan. Let's have this open dialogue to be able to reach out. So a lot of cases, this is just food for thought. I'm not everybody, but the opportunity is here. And so this mind discussion, I think that, you know, I've beaten this thing enough so far. So anyway, that's all I have to say about that now. And again, thank you very much, listener. Yeah, honest, all those callers who called in, I thank you for everything. This is Cal Nez, and I will talk to you next week.
Politics on the Navajo Nation. Politics, Politics, Navajo Nation.